up and welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour with your hosts, Doug Eddy, Tim Keller, and Tyler Gunther. Bring us all inside the huddle. Whether it's in season or off season, this is your spot for the best and in-depth Dynasty fantasy football advice. So let's not waste any more time and get right to it with Doug, Tim, and Tyler with another Dynasty Happy Hour.
All right, we are live on the Dynasty Happy Hour. If you're listening to this on the podcast, thank you. If you want to have a different experience next week, you can find us on Periscope or YouTube. Just search Dynasty Happy Hour and you can click to subscribe, and then it'll tell you every single time that we go live on the channel. So usually Sunday nights, maybe we'll have some special treats mixed in. Who knows? Lots of exciting things going on at Dynasty Happy Hour. I'm here with Tim and Tyler, and we have special guests this week. Mike Clay from ESPN has joined us. He's currently watching NASCAR and chatting with us. So Mike, welcome aboard.
Hey guys, how you doing? I'm going to be a little distracted, very unprofessional. I mean, look, I haven't had a haircut in a while. I'm not really shaving that much. I'm just wearing a t-shirt. I'm watching the race. I mean, this is the quarantine life right now. So I apologize in advance, but you know what? I'm looking forward to talking some Dynasty here for the next hour. So let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give you guys a little bit of, you know, what's going on in the show, we're going to talk a little bit some fantasy news. There has been some news here in the last week or so, so we're going to cover some of that. We've got a fun little stats and stuff name game that we're going to go over, where we take a player A and player B and you try to figure out who it is. So that's always fun. And then, you know, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor like we usually do. And then we're going to get into our segment with Mike, where I'm going to pepper him with all sorts of questions. And it'll be a lot of fun because I really like Mike has a different a little bit different outlook on Dynasty than I think a lot of people do. If you look at his rankings compared to like what we see in the industry and the consensus, there's definitely some things that differentiate there. And I don't have them written down because I wasn't going to pepper with Mike questions about that.
Yeah. You know, if you're going to pepper him with questions, hopefully he doesn't get too salty, but we'll sugar him up before.
Oh, I like it. Oh, Tyler, the dad jokes are flowing already. You know, it's going to be a good night when Tyler's ripping off dad jokes already. All right, so let's get into some fantasy news. So up in Tyler's neck of the woods in Minnesota, there's going to be a Dalvin Cook holdout, I hear. So Dalvin Cook, he's going to make a smidge over $2 million in 2020 on his current contract. Supposedly, he's looking for something around the $13 million a season range. The Vikings currently have 12.2 in cap space, according to overthecap.com, and they just recently freed up some cap space because they were in a pretty tight spot not too long ago. So what I want to hear from you, Tyler, so you've got your ear to the ground, you know, you're on the pulse of the Minnesota Vikings up there in Minnesota. So in your opinion, Tyler, how do you see this situation playing out?
I would have to say he signs. I mean, from what I have heard, he'd be happy with 13, but I'm guessing it'd probably be around 12. I'm guessing it'd be around $12 million a year. And I'm pretty sure the structure that they're going to have trouble with is the years, how many years, because they do have a young running back in Madison, but he's unknown. Like, yeah, he showed up, but he had injury issues himself this past year. So who knows if he's going to be fully healthy if he gets a full-term job. But I mean, Dalvin Cook's the real deal when healthy. He's a top five running back in the NFL when healthy. So I think a lot of the issue with Minnesota giving him money is saying, okay, you haven't been fully healthy. What do we get in this contract in return to make us feel more comfortable doing so? But I do think Minnesota is a team that wants to get this done. They've already had talks before. So I'm going to ask Mike about this. Dalvin Cook, what do you think is going to happen throughout the season? And I've already seen in dynasty leagues, a lot of people kind of getting nervous, and it's a huge buying window. So what would you suggest?
Well, I'll tell you what, I have Dalvin Cook on a team and I had him last season, and I had Madison too. And I'm in the same situation. So I feel content right now. I'm just going to ride that out. I mean, I guess that's the way of saying if you're in a shallower league or a league that's not super competitive, like the ones we're in, you might be able to still get Madison at a relatively decent discount, or get him off waivers if he's still sitting out there. Get him on your roster. That should be a priority without going totally overboard. If you do that, then you're fine. As for what's going to happen, guys, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not in Minnesota's front office. I don't know what they're going to offer him. I don't know if Dalvin's going to play hardball. in the way Le'Veon Bell did, or which probably really isn't a realistic option at this point, or like Melvin Gordon did and just sit out a month and then come back and finish strong. So I'm just guessing, like everyone else, all you can do is essentially play the odds, use the information you have at hand, and make the best possible decision. I know that seems obvious, but sometimes we overthink it and try to predict what's going to happen, and that's how you can really get yourself in trouble by buying low or selling too high. So I'm just kind of taking it day by day. Maybe I just pick Michael Thomas over Cook in an MFL 10, you know, so you can make little decisions like that and move the needle slightly, but I'm not going to overreact here in June.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think if you look at the history with Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon, it didn't really work out for them when they held out financially. So my hope is that, Dalvin Cook says he's going to hold out just to kind of motivate the Vikings. And then, if that doesn't get motivated for a deal, that he doesn't hold out, because it's really not really beneficial to him, I think, in the immediate or the long term, for that matter. But so, Tim, I want to go to you. So if you own Dalvin Cook as a standalone, you just have Dalvin Cook, you have no Alexander Mattison on your roster, would you trade for Mattison now as a Cook shareholder with the inflated price, or would you just try to ride it out?
I would try to ride it out, knowing that with the new CBA, the year's not going to count if he does hold out. I think he has like 5 days of camp he can miss without the year being, docked from his accrued seasons. So like Mike said, I don't think that we're going to see too many more holdouts a la Melvin Gordon, a la Le'Veon Bell. So if I'm not going to pay that inflated price. Somebody's going to try to take advantage of the current situation, and they obviously should. They should try to sell at max value, but I'm not willing to pay. I'll wait until... Like Tyler says, they traded away Stephon Diggs, essentially making their decision ahead of this. They traded Stephon away knowing that they would have to sign Dalvin eventually. And they'll come to something. It's just the years. I agree with Tyler there.
So on the flip side of that, would you sell if you're the Mattison shareholder to the Cook shareholder and try to maximize while Madison's price is probably at an all-time high at the moment?
Absolutely. Dynasty? Absolutely. Yeah. Take this window of opportunity and try to maximize your value.
Yeah, I think his value right now is probably like a 2021 second. If you're trying to sell him to the Cook owner, I think the Cook owner is probably going to pay that, especially if they're starting to get nervous. Mm-hmm. And again, Mike said it's June. I think it's going to be really interesting when we talk about Scott Fishbowl next month, where Dalvin Cook starts to slide, because people are going to be afraid of taking Dalvin Cook in Scott. I mean, that's really the next big drafting event we have, is Scott Fishbowl 10. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that starts to play out in the next month or so. So next bit of news, Todd Gurley, he finally passed his team physical on Monday. Hey, it only took a couple of months, but he is officially an Atlanta Falcon. So for 2020, how do you view Gurley in the Falcons offense? Do you view him as a safe running back two? An RB? Does he have RB1 upside? Is he a risky RB2? So this one I'm going to go to Mike on, because I think Todd Gurley currently presents a value not only in redraft, but also in dynasty going to the Falcons. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, on one hand, he's one of the few running backs where you feel pretty secure about his role, right? I mean, we're talking more and more about committees, and there's so much talent being injected into the running back position that there's multiple backs that could be a factor, if not three backs. So, two or three backs. Whereas in Atlanta, it's pretty much Todd Gurley. So you like that. You like that he has a path to 20-25 touches a game. And in the short term, that offers a lot of value. But you're worried about durability. You're worried about efficiency. I mean, he was really, really poor last season. We talk a lot about it, how he didn't really produce as much as a rusher, but his receiving efficiency was one of the worst in the NFL. And that's the first time we've seen that sort of production from Todd Gurley. So those things kind of add up and concern me. And honestly, at his ADP, it's an easy pass, honestly. And that in that range where he's been going in the third, fourth round, I'm looking at the wide receivers in that area. So I've been kind of staying away from the Gurley, the David Johnson, the Le'Veon Bell sort of tier of running backs. I don't like that group. There's just too many question marks, too many things make me nervous. And I know it's, and by the way, the other thing with Gurley too is, through the roof in the touchdown department last season too, right? I mean, he was very fortunate. If you had him on your team, you were bailed out by the touchdown department. You're not really going to get that quite as much in Atlanta. I don't think an offense built around the passing game. So again, I'm just trying to avoid Gurley unless he plummets in my draft.
So Tyler, you're a Falcons fan as well as a Vikings fan. So these first two questions are right up your alley. So what's your view, Tyler, on Todd Gurley in Atlanta? I personally like it. I think Atlanta's offense is due to rebound big this year. And, you know, one of the things that they struggled with last year was red zone efficiency. And I think that Todd Gurley can definitely help them with that. So, Tyler, I'm interested in your spin on what Gurley here with the Falcons.
I think you're forgetting that Matt Ryan has the year-to-year thing where years on.
He was good last year, though. He wasn't terrible.
He didn't have his boom year that he has.
That's
so
true. It is so, every other year through his whole career.
Yep. So this year is his huge boom year. So you gotta go with that. I mean, you got to go with stats. It's so simple. Right? Stats and stuff.
Stats and things. All right. So, yeah. So, Todd Gurley. So, let's do a little bit of name game. So, I think I know where Mike stands on some of these players. But so, would you go Gurley or Fournette for 2020, Mike?
I'm going to go Fournette. I definitely think he's pretty much going to get – I want to say the same role, right? They bring in Chris Thompson. You have Reichwell Armstead in his second year. New offensive coordinator that's going to probably lean a little bit more toward the passing game. But – I still think with the touchdown regression to the mean and the fact that he's still the lead back, that he's going to be a better player. Not to mention that he's a little bit younger as well. I mean, they're pretty close in age, but I think he's the preferred choice there.
All right. So what about Todd Gurley or David Montgomery?
I do have Gurley ahead. But again, I'm going to try to avoid that tier if I possibly can. I mean, you can get Montgomery just a little bit later in your draft. So I would rather just wait and take that shot on Montgomery.
All right. And the last two, Todd Gurley or Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell?
I do have Gurley ahead. Gordon's a closer call. I do have Gurley ahead of him as well. Just think in Denver, they are going to try to run the football, but you have Philip Lindsay to feed there as well. Whereas Atlanta, as we talked about, not as much competition. So I'll give Gurley the edge, but I can't stress enough how much I'm trying to avoid that tier of the quote unquote older backs.
Yeah. So I guess my question for you is what wide receivers in that range are you targeting over some of those older backs? Like whatever, a couple of your guys that you're like, ooh, I'm definitely taking this guy over Gurley, Gordon, Bell, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them. So I'm looking at Gurley right now in recent high stakes leagues or actually this would be the MFL 10s as of late. He's going in round three. So who else is going in round three? And again, some of these guys going a few spots before him, but nonetheless, these are round three and four receivers. Mike Evans, Kenny Golladay, DJ Moore, Adam Thielen, Allen Robinson, Juju, Amari Cooper, OBJ, Robert Woods, Calvin Ridley, Cooper Kupp, AJ Brown, all going in the third and fourth round. I mean, I feel a lot better about my team with those guys over at Todd Gurley.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your dynasty rankings, and you have Gurley right next to Chris Carson. He's at 54, Todd Gurley. Singletary's right in front of him. So I do like that. I love Singletary. I think he's a stud. But yeah, the Chris Carson, man, we'll have to get into that when we talk about rankings. I know you've got him right behind you so as a jersey. So we'll have to talk more about that.
All right. Some other running back news closer to my home and closer to Mike. We've got Sony Michel recovering from foot surgery he had in May. So I know there's been some chatter. You know, Michelle's got a pretty lengthy injury history being banged up here and there, obviously ACLs and all those things. So Damian Harris is currently RB56 in DLF ADP. He's currently RB65 in your rankings, Mike. Is Harris worth adding after getting just four carries in 2019? He was a third-round pick last year from Alabama, so we all know Belichick and Saban. They're pretty tight. They talk. Harris was only active. I think he was only active for three or four games, mostly played on special teams. But I mean, Sony Michel didn't have a really great season last year. I know there was some offensive line issues with the Pats and just offense in general issues. But is Damian Harris a guy that, like, I know some redraft people will probably take a stab on him late in drafts, but at his dynasty ADP, do we see anything coming from Damian Harris in year two to maybe split work with Michelle or just enough to mix it up for you?
No question. One of my favorite buys right now, unquestionably, and that goes for season long and dynasty. I've drafted quite a few best ball drafts so far. I have him on, I believe, every single one of them. I've taken him in the last couple of rounds, traded for him in our PFF OGs dynasty league. Got him kind of on the cheap a few weeks ago. No question about it. I mean, we've seen this before with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, these rookie running backs that, regardless of the pedigree, just don't do much, right? And then kind of year two, they take a leap forward. We've seen that with quite a few backs over the past decade plus. So Harris, I think, will get an extended look. They had a lot of positive things to say about him late last season, even though he didn't play much. And let's be honest, they like a committee, yes, but he is one injury away from a pretty significant role. So Harris is an excellent guy to put on the end of your bench. I know it's not Tom Brady offense anymore, but it's a possibility that he could be a 15-touch guy, maybe even get the goal line touches at some point if Michelle's not a factor. So absolutely in on Damian Harris.
He's so cheap. So cheap.
He's a throw-in in a lot of deals.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the fact that it's not the Tom Brady offense anymore makes me think that they're going to play defense and run the ball a lot more than we've seen out of the Patriots in the past few years.
Jarrett Studham.
Brian Hoyer? Anyway. Yeah. Hey, don't make fun of Brian Hoyer. He's been with the team like five different times. All right. So now we're going to do a little bit of some mystery players, a little bit of a name game here. So I'm going to give you some information on
what's the name? What's the name of this game?
I don't know.
Get it right. What do you want to name? Stats and stuff.
Stats and stuff. Okay, fine. it's HR Puffin stuff. Whatever. So the panel is going to decide which player they prefer. And you can guess the players after everyone has answered. And then I will reveal at the end who they are and their ADPs. So if you're ready, take notes if you feel free, if you can remember it. Awesome. So player A is 27 years old. He's only played a full 16 games twice in his six seasons. He's averaged 75 receptions, 1,042 yards, and six touchdowns over the past two seasons. This player has seen at least 124 targets or more every single season except for one. So now we're going to go to player B. This 25-year-old had the seventh most targets in 2019 with 148. Despite having 90 receptions, this player finished wide receiver 18 with PPR scoring in 2019. Oddly, with 40 less targets in 2018, this player finished as wide receiver 17 in PPR scoring. So my first question is, which player would you rather have, player A or player B?
I feel like I know what player A is.
Okay.
But I'm probably wrong. But stats and stuff is my game. So I think player A is Cooper Kupp. And I love Cooper Kupp. So okay. Player B, I absolutely have no idea. 25-year-olds.
I can tell you that player A is not Cooper Kupp, because if you were listening, the 27-year-old has played six seasons. Cooper Kupp wasn't a rookie until he was 25.
I think the 25-year-old I'm going to go with, because I also have a feeling I know who it is. But obviously, I am very good at this, so
you're going to go with player B, who you prefer.
I'm going to go with B because the younger player, and he's, I feel like he's getting similar production.
Okay. Tim, what about you? Player A or player B?
Well, everything about this game set up to make you take the player that you're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe I took, you know, this wide receiver 4 over this wide receiver 2. But with the younger age, at this point in their careers, less likelihood of injury, it seems. And I believe you said player B had 148 targets last year.
He had 148 targets, seventh most in the league.
I am going to go with the player that's getting the most targets and hope that they turn that into production. Opportunity should lead to fantasy production. And I like the youth. I'll go with player B.
I hope we have a guess for player A on stats and stuff.
All right. OBJ. Well, hold on a second. Okay, well, hold on a second. Okay, so Mike, are you team player A or team player B with these two players compared?
I lost track of some of the stats in there, but can I guess the players?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, if you want to, sure.
Is one Lockett?
That's not Tyler Lockett.
That's a good guess.
Not Tyler Lockett. How about Tyler Boyd for player B?
So you are correct. Ooh. Player B is Tyler Boyd.
Okay.
Do we know who player A is?
Somebody guess OBJ.
That is correct. So nice. Currently their rankings. So Mike Clay's dynasty rankings. You have Odell Beckham Jr. at wide receiver 14, and Tyler Boyd at wide receiver 29. Mm-hmm. So you look at OBJ. We're looking a lot of. I think that his name, obviously, in the upside of Odell Beckham Jr., gives him a lot of value. Where Tyler Boyd isn't the sexiest player, but damn, he's productive.
I love Tyler Boyd. Love, love, love him. And I'm actually happy I chose him. But OBJ, like value-wise, you should be able to get Tyler Boyd plus.
Yep. Yeah, so, I think Tyler Boyd is the safe floor where Odell Beckham Jr. is the ceiling that we've all seen him early in his career produce. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone sees that. It's like the Josh Gordon effect, right? Everyone sees a magical season out of a player. And then there's always that hope. Like, if he did it once, he can do it again. Yep. Now, Odell Beckham Jr. had his first three seasons were historic. Then the last couple, it's been down. So people are holding on to what they saw in the first three seasons, being like, I know he can do that again. Now, if he does that again, great. But we don't know that that's not it's not a fact, right? So you're hoping that he can have a season like he did in his first 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that gives him the name recognition and the hope that people have is because people see Odell Beckham Jr. and they remember the awesome things that he did in the beginning of his career. So, versus Tyler Boyd is just, he's consistent. Like he's the turtle and Odell Beckham Jr. is the hare. You know what I mean?
So sticking with the Browns, we do have a question and it's from Aaron Yankel and it says, what should we expect from the full year of Chubb and Hunt in terms of split percentage? Mike, you are very good with this type of stuff. The split percentages, you do the projections on ESPN. What are you kind of seeing that the Cleveland Browns are going to do with these two phenomenal running backs?
Yeah, I think there's a chance both of these guys are weekly fantasy starters if this offense takes another step forward. And keep in mind, they were essentially, especially if you adjust for opponent, were an above average scoring offense in the touchdown department last season. So it could perhaps be even better if Baker Mayfield takes a step forward and with Kevin Stefanski there. But I do have Nick Chubb clearly ahead, 270 projected carries to 86 for Kareem Hunt, but only 27 catches for Nick Chubb, 52 for Kareem Hunt. That would kind of align with what they did in the second half last season. Look, Nick Chubb, outstanding rusher, one of the best in the NFL in that department, right, since he was drafted. The guy has been crazy effective. He's going to sustain a big role. But we did see his carries drop a little bit and his targets drop quite a bit when Kareem Hunt came in there. So that's something I've considered when evaluating Chubb, who's 10th in my projections in PPR. I think he's been a little bit overrated in season-long drafts just because you know Hunt's going to be a big factor as a pass catcher. So like them both, to be quite honest. I've had shares of Kareem Hunt quite often this season because he should be a value play, I think, in PPR.
Do you remember Nick Chubb had that horrible injury? Not a lot of people do anymore because Nick Chubb has recovered from almost a career-ending injury. And you go back and think about that, and it's insane to think about just how good he is. I think he's probably top three best pure rusher in the NFL next to Zeke and probably Barkley.
It always amazes me with, like, you know, Willis McGahee, similar, like really horrific injury, but he was a solid pro running back for a lot of years. And it's just crazy to me, like, that guys can have injuries like that and then come back and be successful. It's pretty awesome.
So one more question from Kluber Lang, 83.
I think that's Clubber Lang. That's a Rocky reference, Tyler. Okay. Not Clubber Lang. Come on.
Okay, same thing. Philadelphia people, right, Mike? Which of the Rams running back by committee is the one to own in Dynasty? I know my answer, Doug. I'm pretty sure you're on the same.
I've got a Florida State sweatshirt on. What do you think my answer
is? No, Mike, are you as big on Cam Akers as we are?
It sounds like you're higher than me. I do like Cam Akers. I think he is the correct answer here, right? He has the size, he has the speed, he has the rushing ability, the athletic ability, he has the pedigree, he's the second round pick. He has Sean McVay on his side. There's a lot to like, but at the same time, I found myself, especially in season long, drafting Daryl Henderson. I think he comes at a decent value. We have seen, and I've tweeted about this and written about this quite a bit this offseason, we've seen day two running backs be poor fantasy options as rookies over the past decade. And you might say, well, things have changed the last couple of years. And no, it has not. It's still been the same kind of thing. First round running backs, outstanding in fantasy. Day two, not as much. They've been in more committee situations. And that is the case for a lot of these guys that we've been talking about this offseason, like Taylor and Swift and Dobbins and even Akers. So I'm not forgetting about Daryl Henderson and him potentially making a big leap here in year two. Keep in mind, his last two seasons in college, I think people forget about this quickly because of last year, a lot of recency bias. He averaged just under 9 yards per carry in back-to-back seasons. That talent has not completely disappeared. And honestly, guys, this time last year, this guy was going to, the fifth round of season-long draft?
I mean, people were nuts.
He was the first rounder in rookie drafts, too.
Mm-hmm. Look, I thought that was out of control for sure. Yeah. I was not on that bandwagon. I didn't touch him in season-long, but the talent is there. So now perhaps a little bit of a post-type sleeper. It would not shock me at all if he proves to be the better back in this backfield.
So how I kind of see it, I thought Henderson in college reminded me a lot of Tev Coleman. And I would have to say Akers, I mean, same college, Devonta Freeman. They could play the similar roles.
Similar builds,
yeah. Yeah, in that offense. I mean, Akers is a heavy guy. People forget he's almost 220 already, and he's super young. I think he's still learning the position. And I think Henderson will actually help him out without carrying the full load year one. But I do think Akers long-term will take that role by year two or three. And I mean, I love Akers. So,
and I guess the lesson is just buy Malcolm Brown. I don't know.
Yeah. That's probably the right answer. That's probably the right answer.
Do not do that. Yeah.
Sorry, John Kelly.
We do have another question from Corson TM. Who's the favorite running back to own in Ohio right now? Mixon or Chubb? You have them back to back 8 and 9 in dynasty rankings. Who would you rather have, Mike? Who do you think has the opportunity to actually sign a longer term deal and have that stability at running back in dynasty that we love?
Man, that is a close call. Like you said, I have them back to back. Joe Mixon is 7 months younger. You know, I could mention the fact that Kareem Hunt's in kind of the way, if you will, to a full-on workload for Nick Chubb, but that may be one more year, right? We're not overly concerned about that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lean towards Mixon just because we've seen more of a passing game role, and short-term he does have a clear path to a massive role as a pass catcher and a rusher. Now, I don't know. He didn't catch many balls last year. Don't get me wrong. He only had 35 catches. We want to see that increase, but I think he can do that. I think we've seen it before. It's in the arsenal, and that offense should be better this season. So I'm going to give a slight edge to Mixon, but again, I'm not really arguing against Chubb. I have no qualms either way. And some of these guys are close. It's just how the game works.
Yeah. And Bill Belichick said Mixon is actually the best running back in the NFL. So if you want to take another person's advice, Bill Belichick says Joe Mixon.
Yeah. But if Bill Belichick had Joe Mixon, he'd be in a committee, right? With Rex Burkhead and
Sony Michelle, and James
Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick also wanted Chad Johnson on his roster, and then he was trash. So.
Okay. We do have one last question before we move on into Mike's rankings, and it's from Dynasty Dad. Mike, how do you see the Ravens using both Mark Ingram and Dobbins this year? I'm interested in this one.
Yeah. You know what? I kind of mentioned it before about how day two rookie running backs don't do much in fantasy. I mean, I think that's going to be especially the case for Dobbins. The hype here is out of control. And, you know, look, a lot of, and I'm talking short term for sure here, the short term hype, he's going in the fifth round right now. We were talking about like Alex Mattison earlier, right? Who's going in the double digit rounds, or at least he was, and Tony Pollard, same kind of thing. I feel like the argument is made the same for both, right? Well, if Ingram goes down, Dobbins is going to be a fantasy star. That's why you take him there. But you could say the same thing about Mattison and Pollard and a bunch of other guys that are going late in your draft. It's almost like they're described the same, except for one's going in round five. And you could say, well, yeah, but Dobbins maybe takes control of this backfield. I don't think that's the case. Mark Ingram is too good. He's been one of the most effective backs in the league since he's been around. He's not going anywhere short term. Gus Edwards, say what you want about yards per carry, but this is just a descriptive stat of him. He leads the NFL in yards per carry since he was acquired by the Ravens a couple of years ago. The guy is effective when they ask him to run the football. He's not going anywhere. So I think that's something to consider. And I'll add one more thing. I have some content coming out later this week, a project that I've been working on for over a month. I can't wait for this to drop at ESPN. It has to do with coaching, and I'll kind of leave it at that for now. But in there, I talk about Greg Roman and what he has done with the running back position over the past decade. And it has not been kind to the running back position. A lot of rushing production. Don't get me wrong there, but the targets, the receiving production has not been good. The fantasy production has also not been good at that position. The quarterbacks have gotten a ton of rushing production. The running backs haven't. So I think even the talk that, well, his ceiling is so high in this offense, if he gets that starting job, not really, not as high as people are making it sound. And I think his ADP is out of control. But now, I love the talent, long-term, great athlete. There's certainly RB1 upside, but I think that he's very, very overpriced right now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people that are picking him in Dynasty are kind of just like, hey, you know what? I know I'm not going to – there's potential I don't get anything out of him in year one, but it's really the year two.
Yeah.
When you look at, like, you know, Dobbins is – typically he's, you know, picked between pick 3 and 5 in most of our rookie drafts. And I think, you know, people in Dynasty obviously have the long term in mind. So they're like, you know what, I'm not going to get anything out of this asset potentially in year one, but really in year two, I could be sitting on a gold mine. So it's even worth that price. But in redraft, like, I definitely agree with you. People are going, he's going to get more and more buzz, and his ADP is going to be out of control, a lot like Jarrell Henderson was last year. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to be like, oh, well, you know, he's one injury away. He's elite. He's going to be quoted as the league winner over and over again, like if Ingram goes down. And I agree with you. Gus Edwards is a pretty darn good running back. So, yeah, I don't disagree with you in there. But for Dynasty, yeah, I really love the outlook on J.K. Dobbins. So let's get into a little bit of a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get into some more questions for Mike. So do you think you're smarter than an NFL GM? I think some of us probably do. I saw the Packers draft. I think I'm probably smarter than those guys. Do you think you're the best at fantasy football? You know what? We're all going to be in Scott Fishbowl 10, so I think we all think we're pretty good at fantasy football. Now you have a chance to prove it. So Dynasty Owner is the only patented fantasy sports game using actual NFL salaries and contracts. You manage your team from every single level, owner to general manager to coach. You can set prices on concessions. I'm just kidding. You can't do that. Dynasty Owner is for the smart and elite fantasy football player. There's no offseason in Dynasty Owner. The rookie draft matters. Free agency matters. Every single contract matters. You can come and do a startup in 2020, which is right now, the year of not greatness in 2020. But now you can do startups using actual NFL players, contracts, and salaries. Then improve your team each year with a 3-round rookie draft. And by trading players and draft picks, you can win weekly prizes, seasonal prizes, and compete in the chase for the ring. The mobile app is up and running. It's on iOS and Android. Rookie drafts are happening. All the exciting things are happening on Dynasty Owner. So go on there, do a mock draft now on your desktop, on your mobile browser. So to learn more and mock draft for free, because I know it's mock draft season coming up, I'm starting to get the itch for redraft mock drafts, I'm telling you. Go to www.dynastyowner.com. All right, Mike. So I've got these questions for you. I'm just going to work them in one at a time, let you do your thing. You know, I know you got NASCAR going on, so this is your segment. So try and multitask as best as possible.
I'm good. Let's roll.
All right, sweet. So the first thing I want to ask you is, can you give us some insight into how you do your projections? And are there any specific ways that you start to get your total number of working targets or carries to divvy out amongst the players on the team?
Some of it's experience. I've been doing this, probably made my first model a little over 10 years ago, just started it from scratch, and I continue to work on it, and it's year round, right? It's 365 days a year. Every day there's a little bit of news. It's been quieter this year than usual, obviously, for obvious reasons, but I'm always tweaking little things, transactions, and you just kind of, you know, you get a feel for it. On top of that, I mean, you have to start somewhere to get that feel, and it goes into league trends, team trends, as I mentioned before, coaching trends. A lot of that is kind of how I build the team projections out, like how many plays are they going to run, how many touchdowns will they score, which is you know, a marriage between team history, league history, and certainly the player talent on the roster. Pass rate, obviously, that's an important one as well. And that's kind of like one side of it. And then on the player level, there's a lot of formulas I put together for projecting rate stats out, right? So that's kind of its own entity. And then from there, I'm using basically going player by player the start of every offseason. We'll say really I'm probably starting it during the playoffs the year before, getting that first run out, and just going player by player, literally looking through their usage. And you know, I could have we could talk about this for hours and hours, you know, what goes into that, but I'm, you know, applying common sense to the data that I'm staring at on a week by week, season by season, all kinds of trends to kind of come together and get a feel for what percentage of the share that player can be expected to have the next season. And again, I'm doing that for everyone. At the end, I hit in a nutshell, hit refresh, and all the projections show up from there. So again, this is gonna be a long, long, long conversation, but that's essentially it in a nutshell.
Now, I have a question just because I'm curious. So at the end of the season, so say the season wraps up in January, fantasy championships are divvied out. Do you ever go back and look and see, all right, where did your projections fall versus what actually happened? And then kind of go through and try to understand the gaps that you might have in your process.
You know what? That's one of the problems with being a nerd and being so invested in the numbers and projections is, guys, it's every day I'm thinking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just it's an illness and it, but it helps me with my job. Just thinking about this all the time. I'll be standing in the shower just thinking about how I can improve or why something was wrong. But I can't say, you know, at the end of the year, definitely. I tweet a lot of stuff about, you know, things I've looked back and you know, running kind of regressions on this data and research to see where they align, whether it was win totals or certain projections, what went right, what went wrong. But it's day to day, really. I'll think about something a couple of years ago I missed on, you know, earlier today and just be thinking about how I can avoid that in the future. But, you know, it's tough because it's all about a process. You have to improve your process, not just something specific, like one exception. If something's off the wall, like why were you too low on Patrick Mahomes 2 years ago? Like you have to be okay with that, right? You want to try to spot those values, those breakouts. Like I still kick myself for not drafting Lamar Jackson last year in the double digit rounds. Like how did we miss that? I mean, a lot of us didn't. Some of us did. I was one who did. Why was I not all over that? So it's a constant battle between sticking to a process, but also identifying ways so that that process identifies those breakout players. But I guess that's a long way of saying that, yes, of course, I'm always looking at and thinking about misses, makes, and why they happened and how I can keep that rolling in the future.
Yeah, I think we do the same thing in the dynasty circles when we look back, especially at like rookie drafts. Like, why didn't I think of this particular thing when I made this? I took a Leonte Carew over someone else. Like for me, I took Samaje Perine over Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara in a rookie draft. Like just because I was like, oh, I like Samaje Perine, the opportunity's there, versus looking at some of the other things going on. Like that's what I kick myself on. But you know what? It's part of the process, and you learn from it, and you try to make the tweaks, you know, going into the next season. But yeah, and I would say it's not an illness. It's just an obsession. That's the health. It's an obsession. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that.
like seeing Tavon Austin drop in a rookie draft to 5 and thinking, I'm going to trade up to get him, when your original plan was to draft DeAndre Hopkins at 7.
I think this year that might be Henry Ruggs, right? I feel like he's falling, and I got my hands on him in a draft, and I'm like, man, you know, I love T. Higgins, but you know, you look at Henry Ruggs, the picked in, you know, right around the top 10.
Yeah.
How do you pass on that with pick 12 in a rookie draft? And I feel like I'm going to regret that one someday, but who knows? Maybe he's the next Tyreek Hill. Who knows?
I love Ruggs. So
is there a player that your model kind of pointed to that if you had to say, hey, you know, you knew your model was on to something. Is there like that one player that your model pointed
to? You can't say Jalen Reagor. Just because of fandom.
Yeah, definitely not. I'm on the opposite side of Reagor. I hope I'm wrong on him, but he's a guy that did not jump out. But it's definitely running backs, guys. I think we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, but running backs have been a home run for me over the past few years. I have a few of them behind me. Jordan Howard, super high in him. Chris Carson, nobody was higher than me on him. Loved him. Carlos Hyde, loved him. I mean, Kareem Hunt, everyone kind of jumped on that bandwagon, but obviously liked him a lot. But it's essentially those guys that show up really well in efficiency stats and really pop out that I've been fortunate enough to get right the past few years, and I'm hoping that continues. If there was a guy in this year's class who is my favorite in the class, the guy that I'm kind of putting in this conversation that can be that next guy, it's Zach Moss. No question. I mean, we were talking about Devin Singletary earlier. I know I like him a lot. He was terrific last season, but I am a Zach Moss guy for sure, if there ever was one. So I think he has some serious upside as a rusher in the NFL.
Oof, that's tough to hear because I have been anti Zach Moss. I have been pretty much saying that he's a more athletic Benny Snell. That is my comp on him.
Man, I don't know. I know he was slow in the 40, but that's like the only knock on him that I can find. I mean,
his spin move is very good. I mean, there's a lot of times.
Efficiency after contact, elusiveness through the roof, and it's 2 years in a row. That's what really excites me about him. This wasn't a 1 year 2019 fluke. In 2018, his numbers were almost the same. He's off the charts for me. I'll be surprised if he busts.
With a player like that, Would you say competition is something that you look at too, like Utah, how there hasn't been many running backs that come out of Utah? Does that kind of scare you to back him up more?
I have not. I haven't thought about it that way. I don't really think about it that like running backs haven't come out of Utah, but certainly the level of competition is something you think about across all positions. But at the end of the day, if you have a huge volume, and I think that's why I like the running backs, right? Projecting running backs, because the sample is so much larger, and over a large sample, he's done it. He's just been successful. And we've seen other guys come from smaller schools that have had that efficiency through the roof and really come through. A guy that's kind of came out of nowhere last season, but you were on him if you were looking at these sort of stats coming into the NFL, was Boston Scott. I mean, talk about just green across the board, hyper efficient, not a big name by any means. I was honestly surprised he was even drafted. And it took him a little time to find his way onto the field. But sure enough, here he is. And he was one of the more effective players in the league over the past, 6 weeks last season. So
yeah, I picked him up for free in a ton of dynasty leagues. That's all I'm saying.
Matt Breida. I'm happy about
that. He's one of them annoying guys that I just kept on the end of my bench for all them years. So, or whatever, for the year and a half or whatever it was, where he wasn't doing anything. So yeah. Anyway, it's just the whole point is it's just been the kind of a model I followed. I've had way more hits than misses, and we'll see if it works out long term. I don't know. Maybe Moss is not good, and I go on a cold streak here, and it's nothing. But so far, so good.
Keyshawn Vaughn high up in that model?
What's that?
Keyshawn Vaughn up in that model?
Yeah, absolutely. He was one of the guys. He was. You know, I basically chart guys as green or red, right? If I like them more than the consensus, or I'm low on them, just to keep them on my radar throughout the combine process into the draft. And Moss was up there, and Vaughn, I think, is the second guy on my list that came up in green.
What about DeAndre Swift?
You know what? He's fine. His numbers he's fine. he's up there. We're crushing Tyler Dream. He's up there with that group. So a lot of all around talent there, but in terms of jumping off the chart efficiency wise, he's not, really in that conversation. He's fine, but he's not a Zach Moss or a Keyshawn Vaughn.
God, I just shivered. I'm just
waiting to see Tyler in one of our leagues trade away Swift for Vaughn and Moss now.
Not happening, but so I'm huge on expanding a portfolio. So I'm not a Moss guy, but I did take him at 205 in a draft, and it's just because if I miss out, I'm gonna miss out on the league. But if he hits, I've got him in one league. So I don't feel completely left out. I did that with Kareem Hunt. I didn't draft him at all. I was kind of skeptical about him. And I mean, he hit the last player, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He seems like he's a perfect fit for your model. I know it was only 1 year production, but the way he plays is a Kareem Hunt-esque style of play. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm thinking back right now to the combine as you say that, and we went out to dinner the one night, and we're sitting there, and it was with Jeff Ratcliffe from PFF, John Hansen, Tim Reardon, that might have been the whole table, and we were talking about rookie running backs because we're nerds, and that's what we talk about. We're out to dinner, we're just talking about fantasy.
I don't find that nerdy at all.
Yeah, not at all. Nope. You guys, you get right in. So the question was, who's your number one running back? And I said Helaire. I said Edwards-Helaire, and everyone was like, what? Like, are you crazy? Like that at that time, that was obscene. Like, why would you pack him up there? So I guess that's my long way of saying that. Yeah, I love him. I mean, very much like Moss. It was Moss and Edwards-Helaire. Those were the two guys that really jumped out in terms of efficiency. Not to mention his receiving pedigree. We saw his receiving production last season. So loved him since the pre-draft process. Then he goes to Kansas City. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
The only bad thing about him going to Kansas City is I can't get him as much because he's undoubtedly
the 1-on-1
for almost every draft. Yeah, that's the unfortunate part.
Yeah, but he's a second-round pick in redraft now is what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's nuts.
Which is too much. I agree. That's unfortunate, too. The hype's a little out of control. But, yeah, I'm a big fan.
The second Andy Reid took him, I started looking at former Andy Reid backs, and once I started comping him to these Andy Reid, it blew me away how much Brian Westbrook he had in him, like their height, their weight, their BMI, their 40 times. I was blown away by how close they were in a lot of these metrics, and then you saw the next day within a couple hours, honestly, the GM had gone to Andy and said, hey, look at this guy, he reminds me of Brian Westbrook. And then that famous quote at this point that Andy's saying, no, he's better. So,
yeah. So I'm interested, Mike, in your model. So Damian Williams, I think, you know, the hype is obviously with Helaire. It's draft season. And, you know, I think a lot of people are forgetting Damian Williams. Like, he was just balling out in the Super Bowl. Now, I know that they drafted Helaire. So I'm curious, from a touch standpoint, how many touches do you have for Helaire versus Williams in your projection for year one?
It was a tough one to sort out. I was very conservative initially, but I have Edwards-Helaire with 188 carries, 43 catches. And then Williams, I'm down to 72 carries, 26 catches. So I've given a pretty decent share to Edwards-Helaire, but he still comes in RB18 in the projections, which shows you, I mean, that's a pretty severe gap. I think one of the things that is overlooked when you look at this Reed backfield, especially recent history, Chiefs backfield is, first of all, very touchdown dependent, which is good. There's going to be a lot of touchdowns to go around. But the overall running back numbers, not too great, right? I mean, it's certainly in terms of touches. The touches in Andy Reid offenses for running backs are not high. The key has been he's had really good backs, and they've gotten the bulk of the touches, and they've had a lot of fantasy success. But so if they start splitting up this backfield, it could be problematic. I don't think Edwards-Helaire right now in this situation is probably going to live up to his ADP, but I do think he's the preferred back. But unfortunately, though, guys, I'm not going to draft either one. I think they're both going too early.
Man, yeah, I got to tell you.
I agree with you in redraft for sure.
I got to tell you, I usually have been stuck with the Zach Moss is not going to be good, but it is really bugging me right now. I am just like,
I love really Zach Moss bugged. As a value in rookie drafts. Yeah, I was seeing him go at the end of second, early third, and there's receivers I like there. I passed up on Moss once, and I think I took T. Higgins at like 209. It was between him and Moss, and I went with Higgins.
I'm going to be really bumming.
You might be.
So, with this, pandemic this year, has that done anything in your model? Have you had to move some rookies down at all? Are you concerned that the lack of on the field training that these rookies are receiving versus all the years prior that this rookie class might suffer a little bit or no?
You know what? I thought a little bit about that, perhaps leaning some of the volume more toward the veteran backs, but or the veteran players, I guess, as a whole. Yeah. But then again, I'm fairly conservative in the first place because these guys are already pretty much overrated for the most part. Like I said, even day two running backs have been overrated in my opinion. And based on the numbers in the past, wide receivers, same kind of thing. These guys generally have quite a bit of competition there. So I'm not going to be through the roof. And if anything, I'm going to take late flyers. So in that sense, I wouldn't say I've overreacted to it yet. I'm going to kind of continue to feel that out and we'll wait till we get more reports. On the whole, though, I've gotten this question a lot. Like, on the whole, has this affected the projection model? And the answer to that is no, because you might say, well, maybe the quarterback and the receiver's timing is off. But, yeah, maybe the quarterback's out of place, too, right? I mean, yeah. And they get a long catch. I mean, how do you –
There's a lot of variables there.
There's no way to quantify that. So me wasting my time studying that, like, what do I even study? There's really not much you can get into. It's all narratives and speculation. So
let's hope this is a once-off type thing where this doesn't happen every year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I do have one more question about your rankings. Josh Jacobs, you are very high on Josh Jacobs. I know he was very efficient. It seemed like every other run he was popping off a 17 or 30 yard run. But what are you not worried about his PPR ceiling?
I mean, a little bit. I would be crazy not to based on what we saw last season, but the fact that they seem committed to throwing the ball to him more often makes me feel a little bit better. So I actually have him with 36 catches projected this season. That's almost double the 20 he had last year. Granted, he missed a few games in there as well. But I do think he's going to be more involved as a pass catcher, which makes me feel better. Also, we talked kind of about how much we love Nick Chubb because how effective he's been. Well, Josh Jacobs is right there. I mean, in terms of yards after contact, he was fourth in the NFL.
Breaking tackle percentage was really good too.
Exactly. So I think he's just a legit talent at that position in terms of ability as a rusher. And again, I think it's in the arsenal to catch the football more. And the other thing, guys, is he's 22 and a half years old come September 1st. I mean, these other guys, the top backs are 24 or 25, 24, 26. I mean, he's very young, has a couple of years of shelf life longer than these other guys. That's another factor.
And he didn't get a ton of work at Alabama either. So he's got relatively fresh tires compared to some of those guys that got 300 carries a year in their collegiate career.
So. I mean, Zeke is still only 18 years old, so he's still super young.
His next birthday party is on Planet Endor, however. So hopefully you get your invites for the Ewok party for Zeke. All right, let's keep it moving. So, Mike, in May, you noted that Drew Lock was your dark horse to win the MVP in an article. So how do you predict that offense to distribute all the targets in a Pat Shurmur offense?
Yeah, and that may have jarred some people. But again, we're looking dark horse, and I went dark horse there before. But
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, yeah, look, I have I have Denver in the playoffs, and if they get there, that means he was at least competent, right? So yeah. I mean, this Broncos team reminds me a lot of the Bears a couple of years ago, right? Vic Fangio running that defense, and that defense kind of peaked the year before he got the Denver head coaching job. But the talent there on paper defensively for the Broncos is arguably a top five unit. So all he has to do essentially is play the Mitch Trubisky or the Blake Bortles role a couple of years ago in the Jags defense.
Don't lose it.
Right. Don't lose it. And if he does that, you know, the Broncos can make a run certainly at the number two spot in that division and certainly a playoff spot. I don't think they're getting over the Chiefs, but nonetheless, you get my point. However, if Locke is a superstar, and it's possible, it's in the range of outcomes that this guy takes a step forward and he is a legit star player, the defense is really good, and the Broncos are surprised and go 13-3, he's going to be in the MVP conversation, right? Sure. I mean, let's be totally honest.
Sure. Yeah.
That was my line of thinking there. It is a very young offense around him, but the talent's there. I love Cortland Sutton. He's going to – I think he's kind of underrated right now in season long. I've been getting him in a lot of drafts. He's a legit emerging star, I think. Noah
Fant, he's an alpha for sure.
Yeah,
No question. Noah Fant, obviously a strong candidate to make a leap in his second season. And then you add the other parts there with Melvin Gordon to the backfield and Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler, who could play inside and out. I mean, I think that not to mention a slightly above average offensive line, I think all comes together to be a pretty good offense this year.
Oh, that is music to my ears. I mean, the Zach Moss talk hurt me, and then you just bring me back in with the Drew Lock talk. Yeah.
But then again, Drew Lock can be a total bust. He's a second-round pick. They have a bad history.
It's okay. I'll just edit that out.
The range of outcomes with Drew Lock are pretty wide, so you kind of have to prepare yourself to hopefully maybe meet somewhere in the middle and be happy with that.
There is no middle with Drew Lock.
While the range of outcomes for Drew is pretty wide, you would have to think with all the weaponry that John Elway and the Broncos front office has put around him, if he is a mediocre playing quarterback this year, the rest of that has to rise him just a bit. It has to.
By week six, they sign Cam Newton. Like, you never know.
Yeah. Not a bad fit there. Not a bad fit.
No, not a bad fit at all. That would be an awesome spot.
They want to run the ball. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Guess what? So Cortland Sutton can go up and get those errant passes.
That's not going to happen because Drew Lock's good. All right, let's move on.
We're going to keep moving. So, Mike, I want to know, who are some of your favorite breakout candidates this year?
Breakout. Well, we got to start with Zach Moss, of course.
Punch him right in the groin.
It's just Steven Seagal style, just right there.
Take him down.
Yeah. Love it. Love some Zach Moss. Other than him, I think I'm keeping an eye on David Montgomery. I don't mind him at his fifth round ADP. He's a guy, by the way, on that list of players I mentioned before. Of course, I conveniently left out a guy who hasn't been good so far, but he was on that list of guys who are highly efficient in the key efficiency categories. Possibly takes a second year lead. Not a lot of competition there. I like him and Tariq Cohen in that backfield just because there's really nothing else there. So keep an eye on him to make a leap. I'm really intrigued by a lot of tight ends. I think that it's a really interesting group of tight end. I mentioned Noah Fant earlier, love him. TJ Hawkinson's kind of been sneaking in there.
That's Tyler's guy.
Yeah, with a lot of eyes on Fant and like Hayden Hurst, but Hawkinson.
Jonnu Smith has got a lot of hype too.
Yes, he has. Absolutely. Teron Davenport likes him a lot, who covers the team for us at ESPN. And Chris Herndon, look, I don't want to trust that Adam Gase. Again, he's going to be part of that feature I have coming out this week, but he's been really bad to tight ends, really bad to offenses altogether, but love the Chris Herndon talent a lot. So he's probably.
What about Western New York? Anybody up in Buffalo, maybe?
Buffalo, Dawson Knox? Offense. I don't think so. Other than Zach Moss, you know, I
was hoping the wind would whisper Dawson Knox, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I see. I'm having a hard time with that one too. You know, they added another wide receiver. They have three guys that are going to want to feature. Yeah. I don't know if there's going to be enough volume for Knox, but I do like the talent there. Obviously, he was considered a raw prospect out of Ole Miss and never scored a touchdown. There, you know, but the raw talent you figure will rise at some point. But
it reminds me a lot of George Kittle. I don't know if he's ever going to get there because of the quarterback situation, but athletically,
there you go. Yeah.
Brian and Kittle didn't do much in college either.
The issue with Mike, though, is when he's got Zach Moss getting 180 targets and 340 rushes, there is no more room.
He is the Buffalo offense. Yeah.
That 500 touch season will drive Zach Moss right into the ground.
Larry Johnson. Yeah, that's his comp that Mike has for Zach Moss. Larry Johnson.
The old Eddie George seasons when he touched the ball 450 times. Yep. It seemed like they just grind him into the meat grinder. All right, so on the flip side of that, so we talked about some breakout candidates. What are there any players that you are completely avoiding? Like they are just off your – you're like, nope, you see their name. Todd Gurley sounds like one we talked about earlier. But are there any other players that – based on their ADP or where they're going that you're just like, nope, I'm going to pass on that player and go somewhere else?
You know, we talked about a few of the guys, interestingly enough. I mean, just looking at ADP at guys and you know, maybe I'm leaning too much towards season long ADP. I actually haven't done a dynasty startup this season because it's been all rookie draft.
Got to get on that. Mike.
I don't want to add new leagues. I'm in too many. So it's been like rookie draft season long, but
I feel you there.
Yeah, so it's not a super easy question to answer, but you know, season long, looking at like Mark Ingram in round four, you know, that, something like that's too early. We mentioned Damian Williams already going at round six is too early. I guess in rookie drafts, I've kind of been shying toward the wide receivers if I can. You know, like I love like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy in there. I think the hype on the running backs is probably a little bit too much for me. So I'd go that direction. Cooper Kupp at wide receiver, as much as I love the guy and think as much as I love Sean McVay, I think that he's being viewed as like a top five receiver by some people, or essentially like he can repeat something similar to that when he's been very over his head in the touchdown department.
I'll take Robert Woods at the lower ADP. Thank you very much.
No, absolutely. I've had Woods ahead of him all offseason. I'm totally with you on that. And how about this one? This is a controversial one. I do have this guy on a dynasty team or two just because, you know, from last year's rookie drafts. But I think the hype's a little much now, and that's DK Metcalf.
I was just about to say on your dynasty rankings, you have DK actually below Debo and Henry Ruggs. That is – I love the love on Ruggs because I think he's a very underrated player. But I mean, I like what I saw to DK. I know Matt Harmon's reception perception showed actually he can run a route tree for what the worry was his rookie year. He can actually run the route tree and pretty well. But I mean, you have like Jerry Jeudy ahead of him and CeeDee Lamb. You have his teammate Tyler Lockett ahead of him. And one of my favorite receivers to go into like the top 20 overall of ADP is Terry McLaurin ahead of him. I love your Terry McLaurin love. I think Terry McLaurin has actually go up into the top 20 of ADP. You can tell Matthew Berry I said that. I love Terry McLaurin. They just better hope that Dwayne Haskins can take a step into his throws.
Yeah. There's no question about that for sure. And look, a lot of those guys in that area, I mean, man, we've had such an incredible injection of wide receiver talent. The youth right now is so great. Exactly. I love A.J. Brown. Liked him a lot last year. He's one of them end-of-bench guys that sees along that just paid off down the stretch. Yeah. Kind of always love that. When you just keep those guys sitting there all year and they finally kick in, it's awesome. Reichwell Armstead didn't work out, A.J. Brown. He did. But anyway – as for Metcalf, I mean, look, last year, I don't think people realized that he had three more end zone targets than anyone else in the NFL and had one top 12 fantasy week, right? This isn't a super high volume position or super high volume offense for the wide receiver position. I don't think that's necessarily going to change. What about Brian Schottenheimer tells you and Pete Carroll tells you that they're going to open up the passing game? I don't think they're going to be any more than a slightly run heavy offense. And, you know, they might not be crazy run heavy, but they're going to lean towards that side of the ball. So I think that limits the volume a little bit. He had a lot of bust finishes last season. And again, I know we're talking dynasty, but short term is a huge variable here. And I'm still a huge Tyler Lockett guy. I obviously like Chris Carson in that offense as their feature back. I think they're going to run through a variety of players, and it's going to really limit Metcalf's high end ceiling in terms of targets. And I think that could limit his fantasy output in PPR. So that kind of is my thinking there.
Yeah, Metcalf kind of categorizes to me like he's great in like best balls, like in a best ball league. Like I love DK Metcalf. Like I own him in one spot in Dynasty. I didn't own him anywhere in redraft. But yeah, the variables are tough. I mean, he may have one big week and then you're going to wait 3 weeks until he has another decent week. So It's really tough. It's hard to have that guy where he's getting drafted as like a mostly like, especially in redraft, he's probably getting drafted as a wide receiver 3 on a lot of teams. And that's the kind of player that's hard to trust. Like his floor just isn't very safe. So
yeah, sorry to interrupt you. Just fifth round value right now, or fifth round ADP right now. Oh, wow. It's just a little much for me. Again, you were mentioning boom bust, but again, one top 12 last season in a year where he by far led the NFL in end zone targets. I mean, it's a little much for me.
So Kelvin Ridley has been everybody's hype guy this year.
He's this year's Chris Godwin.
Yeah. Yes, I've heard that. except he's about 3 years older than Chris Godwin still. Kelvin Ridley, where do you see him standing in this Atlanta offense? I love the player. I think him and Jerry Jeudy are very similar type players. So if you like Jeudy, you're going to like the type of player that Ridley is. You're going to like Jeudy if you like Ridley. But they're very similar styles of play. Do you think that Ridley can take that Godwin step, or do you kind of see it kind of more along the lines of where he hit last year?
Yeah, there's pluses and minuses here. I think it levels out to just inside the top 20. That's where I have him in my rankings. His fourth round ADP, probably a little rich. The Godwin comps are extremely excessive. Last season he did take a step forward. And even then, even in this Falcons offense, he was wide receiver 14 before his injury in points per game. I mean, it's not like he was performing with Godwin last year and then he got hurt and that's why he wasn't there. You know, he was a step back. So you do like the dirt cutter offense. It's been very good to passing games, very good to wide receivers, very pass heavy. I don't think that's going to change. And let's be honest, you also like the fact that he's one injury away to Julio Jones to being their clear number one and seeing.
You can't speak of Julio injury. Come on, Mike.
I know. I don't feel good about it. Trust me. I'm a Julio apologist. I feel like I shouldn't have to be, but I work with Daniel Dopp, who infamously does not like Julio Jones. So,
what?
I know. No touchdown debate. You know, the whole thing doesn't score touchdowns, which is.
I'm going to have to block him.
DeAndre Johnson, lots of yards, not a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah, get on that for sure. But anyway, again, like the player, I think he's fine, but I think the hype is probably a little excessive.
Go buy Russell Gage if you want a Falcons receiver on the cheap.
You know what? I've tweeted about him earlier this offseason. I'm with you. That's a very great sleeper in this
company. He produced very well in the slot for them.
Oh, for sure. My buddy Zach Kruger, I'll give him a shout out at FF Troglodyte, was all about Russell Gage last season. I was like, you know what? Zach and I are pretty close. We talk a lot. And I was like, you know what? Russell Gage is available in almost all my dynasty leagues. And I picked him up in every single league that I'm in. And I see it. They're going to pass the ball between 600 and 700 times easily for the Falcons. Yeah. So why not Russell Gage to get 60 to 70 receptions? It could happen.
Yeah, I've hit 52 with 4 touchdowns, and if you look at last season after the Sanu trade, and we ignore any weeks where Julio or Ridley were out, right? So just when the three played together, he had a 16% target share, was wide receiver 40. So you might think, it's only 40, but that's basically in the flex conversation, and he's free.
He's free in dynasty. Absolutely. So if you can get him as a throw-in now, or if he's available in your league, go pick him up.
Yeah, when Atlanta drafted him, he was an ex-cornerback. He switched positions. So he's a guy that, you know, is going to take a little more time. But last year, seeing him, you know, he played special teams, did a couple kick and punt returns for them, his rookie and second year. But, man, last year was a shocker. Like, I saw him 83 out there. I knew who he was. And I'm like, well, this isn't the same guy. He is definitely putting in the work. And, if he's going to take another step forward, you better watch out, because that Justin Hardy experiment did not work out for them.
Yeah, that's been rough. So, Mike, we got a couple other questions before we get you out of here. So we're just coming up on that hour mark. So what I want to know is, what is your favorite fantasy format to play? How many teams, redraft or keeper, dynasty, any special rules like tight end premium or super flex? Like, what's your favorite fantasy format?
Yeah, I definitely dynasty. Dynasty teams are the closest to my heart. It's not even close. I have a couple leagues I'm in that one of them is with the guys at Roto World, or former and current Roto World guys, which it was one of them leagues where my team was loaded for years and I just kept getting knocked out by just bad luck, crazy stories in the playoffs. Finally won the championship last year, so I feel like I'm over the hump.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm still mad at Jordan Reed for something he did a couple of years ago that had to do with
for never being on the field.
Yeah, that's it. But anyway, so there's that one. Everyone watching probably knows Ryan McDowell from Dynasty League Football League. He runs the Hyperactive Series. I love that team. They're my two favorite teams by far. Just love the process of team building and, you know, pretending I'm an NFL GM like everyone else. So I definitely prefer those kind of, you know, old school. It doesn't have to be super flex. It doesn't have to be too tight end. You know, just make it deep. A lot of roster spots, as deep as a starting lineup as you're comfortable with, and really enjoy those formats.
So how does it feel to beat Matthew Berry in a matchup?
Good, I guess. I don't know. We're good friends.
You don't need to eat humble pie here.
Yeah, we just go out for make a side bet, go out for sushi. You know, move on to the next one. So he's a great friend and colleague, and it's fun to be able to compete with him. Thinking back to a decade ago when you're on a different side of the industry, if you will.
Yeah,
sure, that's awesome. So, Tyler, don't cut me off.
Because I want to talk to him about trades. I am a person who stays up at night sometimes thinking about team building. You talk about the team building aspect. And so what do you have that issue in Dynasty? Because that's one of my favorite parts is just staying up. Like you do one trade and then that trade sparks something in my mind. Like I could probably do this and then I can move this guy here. I could probably trade this for this. And my team outlook will go from 2-year championship window to possibly like a 5-year championship window. Like, do you ever have those thoughts when you're sleeping? Kind of like the meme where the wife's looking at the husband, like, oh, he's probably thinking about other women. Yeah. Do you have that?
Always. I'm actually glad you brought up trades because I'm the guy that some people hate because I'll think of something like that and I'll just throw out a trade in all of my leagues and just usually with a comment or something and just to get a feel, but you know how it is with trades. Like, you know, 60 to 70% of people overvalue their own players and they're offended and they just reply LOL or you're an idiot. You know, it's like, it's always that kind of thing. And I don't care. Like, I don't mind being that guy because I like active leagues. I like them being involved and just stir up thought and get people either countering my trades or whatever it is. So I'm with you. I'm always thinking about trades and, you know, I'll be doing some research and I'll be like, oh man, I'm a little higher on this guy now than I was 5 minutes ago. I'm going to throw out some offers and try and get him on my team or go after Damian Harris. Cause if he pans out, I'm going to feel great. Yeah. I'm going to have him on all my teams. Like I'm always thinking about stuff like
that. Well, there's a league that Doug, Tim and I are in that you should join on Sleeper. It's a super, I forgot the name of it, but we are looking for team members.
Awesome podcast league.
Yeah. Like Liz Loza is in it and the Ball Blast Girls. Mike, you should think about that one.
I've taken like a hard line of not adding any more leagues. Mm-hmm. Like I've cut it down from like 20 to 17 to like 13 last year, I think. And I'm still trying to get it down and I can't do it, but that's tempting. An active dynasty league. Always interesting.
Very active. If you know me.
All right. Two more questions. Promise until Tyler cut me off and sucked up all my time. So we all know that Scott Fishbowl 10 or Scott Fishbowl X, whatever you want to call it, the greatest fantasy football tournament of the year is coming up. So I want to know, what toy division are you hoping to get into? Did you put in a request when Scott emailed out this week? Like, what's your toy division preference? Do you have
one? I did not. I'll be honest. I'm totally out of the loop. I don't know the details right now. I got to leave it hanging. I don't know.
So what was your favorite toy growing up?
I definitely race cars. But I played cars and you know,
racing champions division. That's kind of stinks. Cause that would
Been perfect. There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably that would be my go-to. If you ask my parents, that's what they would say. My cars that I played with. So
you got to check your email and put in either Matchbox or Hot Wheels and then hopefully you'll get that division. Boom, done. I requested Lincoln Logs. My son's name is Lincoln, and I knew it wouldn't be a popular one like He-Man or G.I. Joe or Transformers. So I'm like, you know what? Let me go with Lincoln Logs, and then I can get my little avatar with a picture of my son and some Lincoln Logs, and it'll be cute. And that's what that's the direction I took. So, Tyler, what did you request?
Power Rangers, of course. I mean, I loved Power Rangers. Power Rangers,
there's
everything.
There's so many versions of Power Rangers now. It's
insane, and a lot of the old Power Rangers are now in jail. Like, there's so many stories that I read, like, oh, the ex-Red Ranger is now in prison for manslaughter. I'm like, oh, my God.
Hey,
I read that the other day, that one of the Red Rangers is in jail for manslaughter from waving a He-Man-type sword at his roommate.
Nice.
A He-Man by the power of Grayskull.
But, yeah, no, the first series was awesome. And, I still get jitters. Probably about a month ago, I rewatched when they made the White Ranger and he came into action. And I was like, man, that was so cool.
God, I worked at McDonald's back then when I was a teenager. And I remember we had White Ranger toys and it was like ridiculous. So the hype was real. Tim, did you have a request for a toy division in SFBX?
I also kind of took the same line as you, Doug. I was trying to think of one that probably wasn't super popular. And then I started thinking, well, what can I have, some fun with the Avatar when I, pay to have a good Avatar made. So I went with the Garbage Pail Kids. There's tons of them out there. I think I can play with some of those and figure out a very fun
Avatar. I had a huge stack of those. I used to keep them in a metal tin. I don't know where they went. And I'm so mad about it because I had a ton of them. And they were just
my wife's name is Danielle, and there was a disgusting Danielle Garbage Pail Kid. And she suggested I use it. So I might just go with that.
Go ahead, Tyler.
I feel like my wife would be offended if I did, but I mean,
she told me to do it.
Yeah. And I requested to pick, because you could request what draft position you wanted as well. Mm-hmm. And I requested pick number 5.
You give me anything and I'll dominate, so whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, who had the best finish out of all of us? That would be me.
Who'd you pay?
Yeah, Mike, where would you prefer to draft from this year?
I would take the one spot. I usually just lean for the one. I'll take
Christian. I had that last year.
But while you guys are gloating, I'm just wondering a little bit of Scott Fishbowl trivia. Do you know who won the first annual Scott Fishbowl?
Beat four teams. Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I beat the other four teams. Yeah,
yeah. I was gonna say it was only like a handful of teams, right?
I think it was like 96 or something like that, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I mean, listen, if you're gonna,
well, you know, it's up to 1,400 and change, so you know, you've got some work cut out for you.
You know, he's the first ever Scott Fishbowl champion, and we did not know this. Like, we need to respect more. Like, I get he's known as the nerd from ESPN, but we should bend the knee. As Game of Thrones would say.
I mean, that's what I'm looking for.
There you go. You should get a championship belt made, like a retroactive one, like first annual. Like, I'll talk to Scott. We'll see what
I'll be in the first Hall of Fame class, no question.
First.
There you go. So last question, Robbie just asked this on the feed, and he had it in our show sheet as well. So he says, so you projected Dak Prescott to throw 533 times, which is 63 less times than 2019, after they added CeeDee Lamb to the mix. You also predicted Zeke to have 20 less carries. He says, what gives, Mike? With a smiley face.
Well, first of all, I like the Cowboys this year. I hate to say that as an Eagles fan. I think they're going to be good. So game script is a factor for sure. When you have a winning record, you're winning games, you don't throw the ball as often. So keep that in mind. Another thing is he played all but like, what, 2 snaps for that offense last season. I don't project any quarterbacks above 95% of the dropbacks. It's just not a smart thing to do when you're looking at like player prop line, stuff like that. You have to be reasonable. So that's pretty much going to be the difference there, I think. That being said, I could see it being a little higher with Mike McCarthy there. He was very pass heavy during his time with the Packers. That being said, he was the play caller for most of that. He's not going to be the play caller for the Cowboys with Kellen Moore there. And he called basically a balanced offense slightly toward the run last season. So add all that to maybe a little bit of regression in the mean, and or at least some decrease in a few categories. Keep in mind, he was like top 6 in like every passing stat last year. It's hard to bank on that in back-to-back seasons. Add all that together, and I think the numbers come down a little bit, but nonetheless, still a top 5 fantasy quarterback.
Gotcha. I agree with you on that. So any other questions, Tim or Tyler, before we let Mike go on his way and watch some Zoom?
No, it was a fun time as always, Mike. This is what, year 3 we've had you on, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, at least. Yeah, it's always fun, guys.
Yeah, it's always a blast. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, anytime, fellas.
Absolutely. Have fun. Be safe out there, Mike, and have fun, and join that startup league, because I think you need.
Yes.
All right. I'll think about it. I'll think about it for sure. It's very tempting. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Mike. Appreciate it. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for Mike for joining us. Make sure you check him out on ESPN. He's got all sorts of cool stuff going on. Check out his dynasty rankings. You heard who he likes, who he doesn't like, who he's avoiding, all that good stuff. Make sure you check out us on Patreon as well as dynastyhappyhour.com. And Tyler said that we've got some new stuff going on in the shop. There's going to be coffee mugs, stickers, shirts. We're switching over some vendors and fun stuff like that. Lots of fun stuff going on at Dynasty Happy Hour. So we will see you next week on the Happy Hour.
That's all the time we have for Dynasty Happy Hour. If you're looking for more fantasy football advice, be sure and follow the guys on Twitter. Doug at DaFantasyFather, Tim at DHH_Tim, Tyler at DHH_Tyler. Check out DynastyHappyHour.com for rankings, articles, ADP, shirts, and so much more. Need a question answered on the show? Hit the guys up on Twitter at DynastyHHPod, on the contact link on the site, or by email. DHH@DynastyHappyHour.com. Music is brought to you by the Fantasy Hitman, Mike Wright. We'll catch you back here next time for the Dynasty Happy Hour.